Accession number 14796, Joseph Weir, Reel 8.
Mr. Weir, Reel 8. When you arrived back in England, Mr. Weir, how were you received?
Well, I must say, the last day, the day we landed, we didn't land because the sea was too rough. The ship couldn't get into Liverpool. And we were having to stand off, which was an awful time looking at that. Then eventually we got off the next day and they promised to try to get everybody home for Christmas. We got ashore and we were given a meal. And I was coming in the wrong end again because I complained about the bread. It was the first time I had seen the dark bread in wartime. But never mind, everybody worked hard. And at 8 o'clock the next morning, the 24th, we was on my way home. 4 or 5 of us got together and we got to York, and when we got to York they said there was no trains for Newcastle. Went to see the RTO, who looked at us, had never heard of us. We had to tell him who we were, where we had been told not to tell anybody. And he said, right, he says, I'll put you on the mail train. He put us in the mail van. And he was very kind, he put 5 ATS in with us. So we had a right old sing-song, and that was all, right up to Newcastle. And when they opened the door, the porter opened the door to Newcastle, and he seen the 10 of us, he didn't know what was happening. But that was it. And so that was how we got to Newcastle. I had then had to walk from Newcastle, full kit, to Bladen. Nearly 4.5 miles, and it was black dark. And I went, and nobody, and I didn't see anybody in the road. And I bumped into tank traps that I hadn't expected to come across. But then I got home, and
was your mother expecting you?
Nobody knew we were coming. Nobody knew we were coming. I got to my mother's house, my home, at 9 p.m. This was a fantastic homecoming. My mother was sitting, saying prayers, with my 4-year-old niece, my sister's daughter, who was in hospital. The start of my story, my mother had moved. Since the start of my story, my mother had moved downstairs. When I went in the house and dropped kit bag, tin hat onto the floor, the lady upstairs heard this and come running down to see what was wrong. And she just said, oh my God, you're home. Within minutes, the house was full and they were all bringing rations, as my mother had just had her rations. First of all, Edie Morgan went one better. She invited my mum and I for Christmas dinner, as she had a big family, which was neighbours, as they used to be. The leave itself started very quietly, because I realised that all my friends were in the forces, and you had to look round. So I spent my time going to visit my friends' families, mothers and fathers, and telling them everything I knew.
Did you have any to visit who lost the sons?
No, funny enough, I went to one. The only house I went to was a chap who had been sent home, and I was amazed he had been put in the army. He was a lad, always was a backward lad in younger days, and I went to see his mother to say that that John was home in Liverpool. She says, no, John's home. He had got home before me. And but that was the only one. But I went, and there was one lad at home. One of my pals was at home. But he was courting heavy. So I didn't want to play gooseberry. I just kept up the road. But then his girlfriend found a friend for me, who's her boyfriend was in the forces, but we made a foursome, and that helped relieve a lot. And there was one night I had taken this girl home, and she lived at Benwell, and I was walking back, and one of the biggest areas over the city was taking place at the time, and I'm walking up Scotchwood Road on my own, and there was shrapnel flying all over the place. And I walked home, and when I got home, my mother was sitting with six or seven old dears, having a cup of tea, and they told us that I could have a cup of tea. I says, I'm going to bed, and they just couldn't. I heard them say, oh, he's used all this shelling. No. But the shrapnel was all over the place. And so, after the leave, I had to report back to Leon C.
What date would this be?
January 44, the end of January 44. We got 3 weeks leave, you know. We went to Leon C, and I was there 2 or 3 weeks, just doing nothing.
Was the rest of the battalion there?
No. The rest of the battalion, actually, at that time, which I didn't know, were in Northern Ireland. They had landed in Northern Ireland. But from there, I went to join the unit, and they were in the Cambridge area, in Huntington was the town, the nearest town. So I got to them in March, and
were they pleased to see you? Did they know you were coming back?
No. I met the CSM first. He's couple of you. He says, it shouldn't be up now. He says, you've been away 6 months. I says, that's all. I says, it came in handy. But he says, you'd have to take it off. Right, I says, right. And he says, are you church at chapel? Well, for the uninitiated, the church were the ones who went for a drink, the chapel were the ones that didn't. So I got put in the church hut. And I was very pleased to find out that Corporal Richardson was in charge of this hut, who away in the town. And I gave him a welcome home, because I put a bag of cork in his bed when he came back. And he asked the orderly who put the cork in. He says, that man lying there, and when he went to justice, or would be you. But that was that. And the next day, the first person I met was Major Atkinson. He says, where? You're with me. Well, when I mentioned this to the signal sergeant, he says, no, he says, the teams are fixed up. He says, everybody's arranged, you know. He says, no, you're just one of the spare ones. But Major Jackson fought. Then they come, they said, well, you'll have to take another test. I had to do give us a couple of weeks test, and then I had to do the Morse code again. And I passed through, and I got fixed up with Colonel Atkinson again, well, Major Atkinson at that time. So that pleased me, and I think it pleased him. Went to Lowestoft for a bit of training. We did the signal training, and the others were doing, whether they were doing invasion training, I wouldn't like to see it, but we were just stuck on. But that was when they gave us these awful berries. And when we went down to Lowestoft, we took them off. We were ashamed to go out with them. But weren't long there.
Had you, or were you receiving any new signal equipment, new radios?
No, they were the same kind. It was the one that carried on my back, and the one for our waist that we had just introduced for Sicily. They're exactly the same things. And then we went down to Hampshire, to the forest, you know, where training again, of course.
Any idea what date this was?
I haven't got that.
When you came back from the desert, you were used to a pretty relaxed disciplinary routine, weren't you? Mm-hmm. You wore all kinds of things. Yes. Was this a problem when you got back to England? Did they expect you to be more bulled up, more regimental?
I disagree with that. When we were in the desert, we had to keep tidy. I mean, there was even one man cleaned his equipment one day with toothpaste. And Polly Watson praised him. No, we always had to keep tidy. And if you see the Americans, they went around any old style, but we had to keep. And I mean, I think Montgomery was a stickler for that, the appearance. Mm-hmm. Shabbiness. I wouldn't say that. Anyhow, we got to Hampshire.
Did you, before you go to Hampshire, did you meet any Americans in the area that you were in, Cambridge and Lowestoft? Did you come across Americans?
I will tell you shortly. I'll tell you shortly. But we went down to Lowestoft, to Hampshire, and we were able to go into Southampton for a drink. And is it Rudsey, the other place? Lord Mountbatten place is. That's not the name. But I remember we used to go there and we had to take our own pots because there was a shortage of glasses. There was also a shortage of beer. You had to fight for your life. And one of the funniest things that happened, we were in Rudsley this night, and this pub we're going into had, sorry lads, no beer. Look through the window and there were the locals drinking. And this man was just putting his pint to the glass. I said, I hope it chokes you. He dropped his glass, which thrilled us very much. he dropped his glass. And as I say, we knew what was coming in, and we started doing a lot of training. Going to the island of Hampshire, of Southampton, Hailing Island. And we were doing invasion training there, coming home, getting wet, landing wet, then marching the 12 miles back, which was, found out that was what we were supposed to do on D-Day, go ashore and get this 12 mile and get this hill. And we did that time and time again. And we went back to camp. We had the usual football match, 22 men trying to break their legs, but nobody managed it. And
was the training particularly heavy, arduous at this time?
Well, it was the same as what we've always done. Well, there's invasion training, but I mean, that was it. You know, you were coming home and you're soaking wet and walking wet clothes. And you, I mean, it was reasonable weather at the time. But while we were in the camp, what one thing come to mind, the Americans did come to look after this. In the first night they were there, they showed a film which was going my way, Bing Crosby, and it was a new film, and the songs were really good. But this night, the company sergeant radio, he said, we were sleeping on bedboards. We had to give our bedboards up for the Americans. And I had such an argument with him. I says, it might be my last day in this country, and we've got to give my boards up for the Americans to lie on the grass. I was up for insubordination the next morning, but I got let off. But we had to give then the Americans were cooking my food. And the one morning went, and it was bacon. And everybody says you'll not eat it. And of course, the American had put syrup on the bacon, which didn't go down very well. But they didn't poison us anyway. We got through. And we used to have to go back and forth after thinking it must have been time how long the journey would take to get to the embarkation point and things like that.
Were you aware then that you were going to be in an assault division?
We knew that was when you realised
how did you feel about the fact that you'd come back after all the fighting you'd done? And there were divisions in England who'd never ever been abroad yet. How did you feel about going in first yet again?
We didn't feel very good, because Montgomery came to see us, He says, I brought you home, I wanted you with me, So that was it. And there was the King was there as well, and he had, well, I said the same thing. He wanted the cream of the British, well, that's just, well, bullshit, isn't it? Anyhow, that was the way it went.
Were there many men again? You'd been away for a long time, and outside of a leave, when you'd got home, you were now being faced with great danger. Were men going absent without leave to get at home, or were coming back late?
Well, I couldn't see you. I couldn't see you. I know there was not in my particular crowd. You know, our platoon and signals and well. I mean, majority of us had been together quite a long time. I mean, some of the lads that were still left, they had been to Dunkirk and had been right through the desert and everything, you know. So they I mean, now there was I don't think there was any too much. I know, but we were all trying to break legs. We had a case of we'd been to Southampton this night, and through the bombing and that, they had their water pipes along the gutter. And Corporal Ramsey, he fell. Didn't he break his wrist? After playing football, he break his wrist. He went to hospital, and of course, he missed the day. he turned up later on, but he missed the official there, and that was all it was about. But you know, I was just, as you say, the routine was there, and that was it.
Mm. Had your particular responsibilities changed in any way? Were you still doing the same thing in the same way that you'd done it before?
Well, no, I had been picked to be the company signaller, but, you know, I had my own sets, and I had the same lad that had been with me in Sicily, which pleased me.
Who was this?
Ben Littledyke from Fence Houses. I mentioned him last week to you.
Ben?
Littledyke. Big Dish, we called him. But he was a great lad, a good companion. Then you know what come with tied camp when we knew it was end of the year. Well, you probably do. We all went this year, and we're going on to get on the boats.
How did you take the fact that you were closed in and couldn't get out?
Well, you couldn't do anything about it. You know, I dare say there would be some trying to get out, but I mean, it was an iron curtain. I mean, it was right round. I mean, I don't think there was any way you would get out. I mean, if you got out, you were in for trouble.
What were conditions like in the camp? Were they comfortable at all?
Well, I see we were lying on bedboards in the old Boy Scout type of tents, you know, the bell tents. We're lying on planks of wood. But then we had to sleep on the floor because we had to give the bedboards to the Americans. But, no, I think we just took it everyday life, you know. And
were you getting towards the end, or near the time that you were setting off, were you getting lectures or looking at maps and things?
Yes, well, they were showing you, they had a map, and they had a mould of what we were doing, you know. And I mean, it showed you how to manage, and it showed you the things in front of you, which actually, you know, come true, because when you looked out, there was the very things you had been told was there. The tool that the very thing was here was, you know, when they uncovered it and they showed it, and that was it. It was very, very good, because when you see that, you say, that model was good.
Mm-hmm. But of course, you didn't know where it was.
We didn't know. Nobody knew where it was. No. When you knew there was a big city at one side, which turned out to be Bayeux, you know, and.
As you again came near the day, did the morale of the battalion hold? There wasn't any complaints, people going off?
No, not. Well, as I say, with the iron curtain round, I don't think anybody could get off. And we had a bunch of lads that had been together quite a long time, and we were great friends, you know.
Who was commanding the battalion?
Colonel Green.
What was he like?
He was great, but he took ill. He took ill for the land, and Major Wood had to take over for the actual land and deal. But Colonel Green was back 2 or 3 days after that.
What was Major Wood like?
Major Wood was if ever the man should have had a battalion of his own, it was him. You know, he did get us for a short while, but he got a double MC and everything. He had a short and great man. And he always walked with with a head down and his arm in there, and we all said he worked for a rink and pulling the horse and cart. When I did that, I don't know. But I had the pleasure of meeting him at Seahouses well after the war. And he knew as soon as I spoke who I was, which was very good, but he died shortly after that. He had been very ill. His brother was also in command of our day company. Major Wood was a remarkable man. To take over on D-Day, which is a big responsibility, the actual landing, because he had to swap landing craft and everything.
Mm-hmm. As part of your preparations, was there anything involved with protecting your equipment against getting wet as you landed? Was anything of this?
Well, I'll tell you about that as I come to the landing. But when we were going under the landing craft, you'll be pleased to know that Mr. Churchill was there, Mr. Bevan, and General Smuts. They were shaking hands with us. And the old man, one man said to Bevan, well, we'll get a job on it. Oh, there'll be plenty of jobs when you get back. But they were there, and because, you know, we got on this boat, and we got so far, we had to turn back, and it was put back a day. It was put back 24 hours.
What was the scene like on the quayside that you remember?
I mean, you know, there was landing craft and there was people, and on your way down, there was all sorts of tanks and the ducks and everything, you know, because it was the first time I'd seen these ducks, you know, the motor and mechanised vehicles. And it was fantastic to see. I mean, you couldn't move. I mean, how Jerry didn't get that part of the country that time, I don't know. Remarkable, real control of the air, because it was fantastic. And I mean, and everybody knows what happened, you know, the people, the locals. I mean, when we went for a drink, you were talking to the locals. Tommy Millett and I got friendly with one whenever they saw us, they took us home for supper, you know, things like that. Mr. and Mrs. Chicken, Southampton, but they were very. They were very, very nice to us, those were people, but as I say, I went and land and craft infantry, you know, we all under the deck, and it was very rough.
With the delay, you were held up, of course, for so many hours because it was put back a day. Mm. Did you get off the ship?
We were allowed off the ship, and we just went into the another big departure. Big sheds, departure shed. We stayed in there one night.
And what were you doing?
Nothing. I remember just before we landed, there was one man making a breakfast, because I think we had got some meat to cook, but he was making breakfast. And everybody says, and he said, oh, I'll be all right. He was the first man sick. None of them had come to the actual landing. When we were here, partners on Hill and Island, we used to get soaked, you know, right up to the neck, more or less. You're cutting your wireless above your head. But they give us waterproofs for the landing, and they come right up, above your wireless set and fastened around the neck. They're marvellous. You know, he says, oh, well, you're going to keep dry. Stepped ashore, bone dry. Our landing craft got right in, and we didn't even get our ankles wet. So we didn't need this waterproof. But there was a place detailed where you had to go to them and get all these things off.
Before we come to that, can you remember the journey across?
Well, yes, we're all on edge, you know, all on edge. And
What do soldiers do when they're faced with the imminent danger? What are the kind of things you're doing or talking about?
Women lately. The women. We had a lad from Cumberland, you know, and he was a great character. And, he had a saying, if you see anybody coming in, any big-breasted woman coming towards him, he used to turn around, would you? And the answer was, would I? He was Buck Burkett, a regular battalion man, a real farmer though from Cumberland. We had some marvellous characters.
Were some men showing their nerves?
Well, I don't think, well, probably there were, but I mean, I think you would just think to yourself, you know, you wouldn't, no, I think you would assume, well, maybe here we go again sort of style, you know. But, you never saw any, I couldn't say you saw any cowardice or anything like that. Everybody, and when it come, you were pleased. Would have been that rough, I think we were pleased to get off the boat. You know, and that was just a glance there, and that was when we saw the number of ships and that was coming alongside.
What are your greatest fears going into action?
Well, I suppose you're getting hit. when I got off, talk about getting cheered on, you probably know the Green Howards had landed before us. But I'm going through, and there was a Green Howard looked up, he says, "Get on, Durham," she says, "get at them," but he says, "we're doing our share." You know, and I thought, well, that was a little bit encouragement, because I had to get up to the tape, all this waterproofing off, you know. And I had just got the waterproofing off when my wireless fell off my back. I says, "Oh, the strap snapped." I says, "That's funny. It had been cut with a bit shrapnel right through." And so I had to carry my wireless on hand all that day.
Was the firing coming into the beach?
There wasn't as much as what we expected. Not by a long, long way. I expected a lot of small arms fire. You know, and it wasn't there. There was heavy shelling, you know, and shrapnel. My wireless was just cut off my back.
What was the scene on the beach as you landed? You must have been looking around and seeing things. What were you seeing?
Well, just people like myself just running up, you know. And there was tanks there, and some of them were bogged down, but some were moving, you know, because that was the first time the tanks had gone in for the infantry, which was, that's the thing that pleased us, actually. You know, when we got told that, you said, oh, and they had these ones that were firing like dustbins for the concrete towers, you know, that pleased us, the tanks were in the forest, because I think normal people don't realise that the infantry always went in a forest tank.
Was there any dead around on the beach? Wounded?
Well, I couldn't see. Our own battalion, we had very little casualties on D-Day. D-Day was quite a good day, really, for us. But we were able to get in. And we had practice to get in 11 to 12 miles. We got in about 6 miles. Then
What do you recall of the march off the beach to your first stop, your objective?
I can't remember. Just marching, you know, going up, and I know the sea, the company formed up, going through this little village. And
how were you moving? Do you move en masse, or are you spread out in some way?
We hit a village quite quickly. I don't know what village it was. And it was narrow street, so you had a good, in like Indian file sort of style, you
one behind the other,
one behind the other, either side of the roads.
Where was your position, obviously, with the battalion commander in relation to the others? There would obviously be platoons or companies ahead of you.
No, we're the company. I was the company with the company. We're forward. You know, the I don't know which way they were, ABC. I don't know what way they were in, but they were all just going over the side track. Then they split the different fields. And we got a bit high ground, and was settled down, and that was, we settled down, and we were able to have a little snack, had a bit of meal there, you know, while we settled down, and dug in, of course. And as I say, we hadn't seen a lot of action that day. But and at night, well, I had to say to Glenn Hattison, I had to go back to battalion headquarters because I want a new carrying strap for the wireless. And he says, oh, well, he says, I've got to go in. So there's him and his batman and myself. We went back to battalion, and I got a new wireless backpack, and he went to see the colonel and see what was happening. But
which company were you with?
I was B company, and the next morning we moved forward a bit more, but the lieutenant in our company, him and another and one of the soldiers, carried the great big yellow curtain, like, you know, for the to show the Air Force. He says, "I'm not letting them get me." And
who was the lieutenant?
I just can't bring his name to